Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall is a lecture series that takes place in a bar. It's usually in Toronto, sometimes in other cities. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects, with the one restriction being that they cannot speak on subjects on which they are professionally expert. It cannot be their job to know the thing. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. This is the Trampoline Hall podcast, and it is coming to you in short seasons right now. We're doing a six-week run of one episode per week, and we're now about midway through that season. This season, all the lectures were chosen by Margot Williamson. She went through the extensive Trampoline Hall archives and chose these lectures for you. If you like the podcast and you're in Toronto, you should come check out the live show. Join our email list to find out more about that. I think that's all you need to know for now. Let's get on to this episode's lecture. It may contain mature language. The topic is the stock market, and the lecturer is Beth Jansen.
Thank you, Misha, and thank you, Margot, for getting me to do this 3 days ago. So I am going to lecture you on the stock exchange, which is something that, unlike you, I'm sure, I knew very little about until a week ago. So where did the first stock exchange come from? Maybe, like me, you associate the stock exchange with the New York Stock Exchange, or the big board, as they call it, there. And that is the biggest one in the world, and that's the one we all associate with. But that was not the first stock exchange. The first stock exchanges came about in the 1600s, when, as many of you know, Britain and France and the Netherlands all decided to pillage the New World, and so they would send ships to these far-flung places they'd never been to collect and basically trade, take commodities and bring them back to their home countries. The problem was that these voyages were very, very expensive. You had to buy a ship or build a ship, you had to find a captain, you had to find a crew, and then you had to go there and come back, and it was an extremely fraught endeavor. So you could hit storms, you could hit pirates, there could be something happen on the ship and everyone dies of disease, and that could happen going there or coming back. So what some clever people decided to do was to create limited liability companies that would encompass many different voyages, so that you could invest in that limited liability company, and then you could get dividends at the end of the year or the period or whatever they determined it would be from all of those different voyages, so you could take a few losses and few wins and come out good. So those were really the first modern joint stock companies. There was no stock exchange per se in existence, a place to go. So investors did their business in various coffee shops in London and Amsterdam and other places in France. So debt issues and shares for sale were written up and posted on the shop's doors or mailed as a newsletter. There was an option to transfer their shares to a third party. So, and the other thing is that this was new, so it was sort of thought of as sketchy business. So you got a piece of paper, and people thought, and then a secondary market grew up where you could sell those pieces of paper to people. So basically, it was a secondary market that arose for these sales of paper. People didn't really trust them. So that's where the idea of coming together in one place and, you know, writing it all down in a book came from. One of the most successful businessmen in 17th century Amsterdam was a Spanish Jew named Joseph de la Vega, who wrote a book describing all of this, which was entitled Confusion of Confusions. Yes, and then basically, if you think of the New York Stock Exchange, it was basically a legitimization of businesses in the New World. So instead of the business people in the Americas and the first peoples being the ones who gathered all of the commodities and then sold it to these foreign powers, they organized themselves and started to cut that person out of there and give them the ability to do business with themselves. So on May 17, 1792, the first New York Stock Exchange, well, the New York Stock and Exchange Board was formed. It was formed by 24 stockbrokers outside of 68 Wall Street in New York City under a buttonwood tree. That comes up in all of the research because it's called the Buttonwood Agreement. So I just wanted to take a little moment to tell you about a buttonwood tree. That is basically an American sycamore tree. It can easily be distinguished from other trees by its mottled and exfoliating bark, which flakes off in great irregular masses. And if you've ever visited New York City, you have seen these trees on the sidewalk and you have thought, like me, that they're diseased, but they're not. They're just American sycamore trees. So why do they do this? Well, let me tell you, the sycamore bark lacks elasticity of the bark of some other trees, so it's incapable of stretching to accommodate the growth of the wood underneath, so the tree just sloughs it off. I thought that was very poetic. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit more about the New York Stock Exchange. So, you can now license a seat on the New York Stock Exchange for $40,000 a year. It used to be much more exclusive. So prior to 2005, there were a set number of seats for sale, and there was and is a process by which you would gain a seat. These seats were a sought-after commodity as they conferred the ability to directly trade stock on the New York Stock Exchange. So the term comes from the fact that members would sit in seats to trade. In 1868, the number of seats was fixed at 533, but this number was increased several times over the years, so that in 1953, the number of seats was set at 1,366. The Barnes family is the only known lineage to have five generations of New York Stock Exchange members. Winthrop H. Barnes was admitted in 1894. Richard W. P. Barnes was admitted in 1926. Richard S. Barnes was admitted in 1951. Robert H. Barnes was admitted in 1972. And Derek J. Barnes was admitted in 2003. Now, Derek J. Barnes is known on Twitter as @DJBarnes595. And his profile reads, in order of importance, father of three, Hoboken born and raised, husband, friend, and family man, mediocre age group marathoner and triathlete, working for the man. Who says it? If he's not the man. And on November 9th, DJ Barnes 595 tweeted out, #election2016 was like puking and having diarrhea at the same time and deciding which end to put in the bowl. The American aristocracy. The first woman to own a seat on the New York Stock Exchange was Muriel Faye Mickey Sieber. She joined the 1,365 male members of the exchange on December 28, 1967. She never graduated from college, and she worked her way up on Wall Street in the research department of a number of firms. She specialized in aeronautics at the time when it was not seen as a growing industry, so she was sort of given the shitty account. And she really made her name in trading at Finkel and Company by urging her clients to buy Boeing before it introduced its top-selling 737. So she did pretty well. She researched the New York Stock Exchange rules and found no legal bar to her admission. She paid $445,000 plus an initiation fee of $7,515 with cash and a bank loan backed by her stock portfolio. In 1972, however, she sold her seat for $175,000, strategically taking a $270,000 tax loss, and then bought a new seat for $180,000. With her accumulating wealth, she took flying lessons and bought fur coats and a Mercedes-Benz 350 SL. In 1975, this marked another major change for the New York Stock Exchange when fixed commissions were abolished. So before 1975, brokers had to charge a 25% commission. But this basically changed the game significantly because how cheap a commission you could offer was now a consideration, and not just the quality of analysis and research you could get. As Mickey told Forbes at the time, the research game is over. And that's it. That's New York Stock Exchange.
Jeff Jansen, ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Are there any questions?
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yes, back there, yeah. So what's the relationship between insurance and the stock exchange? Is it like the relationship between chickens and eggs? Or like another relationship?
That's a very good question. They did grow out of each other. Basically, you know, it was kings who would build ships and then send them across. And they, like many other governments, decided that it would be a good idea to privatize and share some of the losses because there were more losses than gains. And so there were insurance brokers, but that was just mainly about getting your, getting you know a quantity of your money back if something did go wrong, but it didn't give you anything if something went right and you got it all and it came back. So they were related, though. Yes.
Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yes, it does. Yes. Anything else? Anything else you would like to know? Yes, over there. Yeah.
What was your personal interest that brought you to the subject?
What was your personal interest? What led you to want to talk about the stock exchange?
So, really long story, but I visited the New York Stock Exchange a couple times, fairly recently, and there was a hall, the only hall there. First of all, it had been redecorated so beautifully and with such a feminine touch, it's ridiculous, it's so gorgeous, and I just was like, what happened here? So I felt like there was a bit of a feminine hand, if I can say, anyways, there was only one place that was named after a person, and that was a hall named after this woman, Mickey Siebert Hall. It was named this year, actually.
Okay, so now there's a couple of things I want. There's so much in there I want to know. So first of all, I want to know more details of what constitutes the feminine touch with which the New York Stock Exchange was Is it just like now a bunch of guys screaming at each other, but there's like a flower, a bouquet of flowers in the middle? Or
they just like redid all the rooms around it, like the nicest kind of hotel that you can do, like very soft grays, nice soft pastels, but still like, you know, aggressive dark woods and lots of brass and copper.
And so you're like this, you're like, oh, I would like to know more about this. And then specifically about, what was your, I missed the name, I'm sorry, it was Mickey.
Mickey Siebert.
Okay, and then that Siebert room, you're like, oh, that's something. Although, but at some level, I kind of feel like it, like your
Siebert.
Question of like, what led you to be interested in this would lead me to think, why were you visiting the New York Stock Exchange? To be like, what made that, like, what was the, it's not on my list of like, oh, tourist things to see in New York, like go see the Stock Exchange.
I got to actually be a part of ringing the bell.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Closing bell.
You got to be part of that. No, that's okay. So tell. So how did that? What did you do? How did you become part of the ringing the closing bell?
So I helped to start a foundation for women entrepreneurs, and to toast, you know, the sort of launching of this foundation, we got to ring the bell, and then we did a summit.
All right, okay, well, I'm very glad you asked that. Okay, that's amazing. Okay, awesome. Anything else people would like to know? Yes, in the back, yeah, over there, yeah.
Do you know what the ratio of men and women traders is today?
What's the present ratio of men and women traders?
I do not know. It's hard to judge because, you know, anyone, you can buy a license to trade bonds for $1,000, or you can license a seat for $40,000, so it's sort of anybody's game.
Well, let's say for seats, really. Let's not count those riffraff bond traders.
I don't know.
Does anyone know? Does anyone here know? Surely some people here are stock gender experts. That's who I think of as being a trampoline. Oh, no one knows.
There's a great documentary from 2013 called Risk Reward.
Risk Reward?
It's all about women on Wall Street. Watch that as well.
So if you wanted to know the answer to that question, maybe you could watch Risk Reward, and maybe that would come across. But certainly, don't ask a single person in this room if no one has even an inkling. Yes, you, the lady in the back.
So when you rang the bell, that means that you started this initiative. So was that like sending a ship somewhere?
So is ringing the bell like sending a ship somewhere because you launched the?
Like you're not sure what's coming in yet.
Are you not sure what's coming in? Is that the? Did you ring the bell to start the day or end the day?
We rang the closing bell.
So it'd be like ringing in a ship.
I think we rang the closing bell on like Tuesday or something. It's like not a good day to ring it. There's really, really, there's very, very specific great
who are
days.
What is the circle of people in whom, with
well,
whom that is like a...
It's a really exclusive little club, but if you're like launching an IPO or, you know, or you're just basically, the sponsor of this program was UBS, and they're a pretty big member of the New York Stock Exchange, so... that's one of the reasons we could, you know, be invited to do this. But yes, it was just like launching a ship of dreams, Marco. And I set it a sail, and I'm waiting for it to come home.
What? Is that true? Is that your question? That's a fine follow-up question.
It's very true.
Do you want to ask if that one's true? We keep going down this path.
I do, but I'll let it go.
All right, Margo's skeptical, but she was
skeptical.
But no, you can ask more. So you're the curator. You can ask whatever you want.
But, like,
you mean like in terms of just the origins of the bell itself?
No, in terms of...
Oh, you mean, no, going back to Beth, like, does it feel like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess where does it fit in with, like, the journey with the organization that you're doing? Does it feel like, oh, that was, like, the moment where you cast that organization out into the world in some sort of big way? Is that what you're...
Yes, and I am trying with all my heart to let go of this modern obsession with quarterly returns, which we have now, which you guys probably know all about. Which is that, you know, every quarter, every 4 months, 3 months, sorry. every 3 months, a company has to report, and they have to do better and better and better and better, and it's actually impossible to just keep doing better and better and better, so I'm trying to take the long game, and play the long game, and wait it out, and not judge too harshly, but I don't know why I'm talking about it. The program is amazing, and it's doing really well, and it's great.
But that does fill us. So maybe there is there something there, Margo, that latches onto your ship analogy where you have to,
just,
like, let
the
ship...
Margo is my cousin, and she wanted me to talk about shame and shame her family. So that's where you're going with this. I'm not going there.
That said, if anyone else is related to Beth in any other way would like to ask her a difficult question, now is your time. Now is your time. Any other question, or anyone really who has a question for Beth? Over there, thank you. Oh, yes, you, yes. Oh, yes, you.
Tell me, what's the origin of the word stock in this context?
Where does the word stock come from in this context?
I don't know. I know that it was bourse in French.
Bourse?
Meaning stock? Yeah, I don't actually know. I think it must have something. See, when I came up here, I was like, oh, it's all about cattle, and, you know, you trade in cattle and that sort of stuff. But I don't. It's actually not that. Does someone else?
Does anyone know? Do you know? Oh, you're.
No, I was gonna ask what stock means, but I know what books means.
Okay.
Books means like a grant.
Okay.
Grant.
Yes.
But I don't know
Well, this is a good time to add a little bit of the research that didn't make it into presentation, which is that a lot of people contest that the first stock market was founded in Amsterdam by the Dutch East India Company. They were saying that it was really in Venice in the 1500s when people would start to trade debts. So, and, you know, they would basically say, this guy, you know, you get it. They would come together in a market and trade debts, and those debtors were filling a hole that the banks left.
So a similar kind of thing. Guys were like running around trading pieces of paper with each other.
It's sort of like the subprime mortgage crisis, really.
Yeah, exactly. Does that answer your question?
I'm sorry, it doesn't.
Not at all. Not even a little. Does anyone know anything about where the word stock comes from? There's a couple of people. I'm going to go the guy up on the wall because you're higher up than the person down there, so that gives you more authority. Yes, do you know?
Only if I know about stock. Or can I ask a question?
No, I want to know if you knew about the stock answer.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I tried, you don't know. So you seem almost angry. It's fair for you to be angry. It's reasonable. I accept your anger, and I offer my apology. At the same time, I'm now going to ask if there is anyone who, A, isn't angry at me, and B, does know where the word stock comes from. Oh, it's Gonzalo. Yes, Gonzalo, yeah. In Spanish and in Old French, we are positing the word for stock is bag or old bag. And we think that in English, maybe stock also means bag. You're not, you've
really
feel
like I have failed,
because
that's the most obvious question. I should have known the answer to it.
No, the most obvious question was, is it like a ship sailing? This is like the second or third most obvious question. Okay, well, it sounds like we don't know, but Gonzalo has a hunch, and I think that's good enough. Now, you, the angry man, you had a question, yes?
Yeah, I'm wondering, the lady who got the first seat, she invested roughly $500,000. Do you happen to know her net worth now?
Do you know the net worth of Mickey who invested $500,000
in the stock exchange? Mickey never got married, never had any children.
So our net worth is going up already.
And she died. She died. In
plummeting. Net worth plummets.
So she also, you know, interestingly enough, she like started a philanthropic thing where she, in her companies, where she would, you know, part of their profits would go. She was kind of like thinking about a B Corp kind of thing, or a corporate social responsibility. One of the first people to really do that. And I want to say it was a lot of money, because she only left a sister, so...
And what's one of those worth? I mean, that's not how it works at all.
It's really not, but she had no heirs.
She had no heirs, so we know that she had a sister behind, but we don't know...
How much she left
how
her.
Much. How did you... How, were
I
you,
wanted,
how
I
come mean, how come you wanted to know? Were you just like...
I just roughly wanted to know, you know, 25...
You just want to know, you hear about a rich person, and you're like, how rich? Is that, it's a reasonable thing to want to know. You could visibly, if you were to bluff, no one would call you on it if you were
like... Like, it was about $400 million.
There you go. That's right, you're applauding. He's like, that is a large sum of money. she bought something for $400,000 and she's worth $400 million. She could have bought 1,000 of those. All right, that would be pointless. Anything else? Anything else people would like to know? Oh, yes, thank you. Oh, thank you, over there, thank you.
I just wonder if you have any more information about this American sycamore.
Any more information about the American sycamore?
Well, it's being blighted by a beetle now. Unfortunately. So, and people in New York City are freaking out about that. But, it really looks like it's dying, and this was a big revelation, probably the biggest revelation for me in doing this research. I was like, oh, those trees aren't dying. Those are sycamore trees. They're supposed to do that.
But now they're doing it. Now they are dying. They look like they're dying.
Yeah.
They are dying, but not really they look like.
Yeah, and the oldest one is in North Virginia. West Virginia. Jesus Christ. There is no West Virginia.
All right. So does that tell you some of the things
you
wanted to know?
Did you look at the stock?
I have an answer.
Oh, we have an answer on the stock question? Yes, all right. Someone's obviously gone to the reference library, asked the librarian, and come back. Yes.
After you Google, and I think you might be disappointed. It says, the original stock markets mid-14th century was a fish and meat market in the city of London on or near the later site of Mansion House, so called perhaps because it occupied the site of the former stocks.
Of a former what? Just what do they mean? A former stocks? What does that mean? A former stocks? Everyone's like yelling. What?
Oh,
you are. So you weren't quite certain it was where you keep cattle, but you're like, oh no, like the stocks, like the.
Well, and it's also.
People are screaming lock, stock, and barrel. But what do any of those things mean in lock, stock, and barrel?
We are so ignorant.
We've learned today that we don't know what the word stock means at all.
Really?
What?
We
can make it up right now. You think it's up for debate right now? What the word stock means? This is the moment where the language has come loose and we can move past it. If you want to take that stab.
No, I don't. I can tell you that. I can refer you to another little factoid, which
sure.
is that the first New York Stock Exchange was actually in a coffee house in New York City at the corner of Water and Wall Street, and it was called the Tantun Coffee House. And that, I do know the meaning of that. That's a very, very, it was a very old way of, it was like a Ponzi scheme, sort of. Tontine.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. It was an investment plan for raising capital devised in the 17th century. And it was a group annuity and a lottery. So basically, you would, a subscriber would agree to pay a sum. You're nodding at me like you know what this
is.
I
do, because
oh, okay,
it's
okay.
Go on. I do, but I think I do. But as long as you describe it, I realize I'm wronger and wronger with each detail you give me, so I'm nodding less fervently.
So basically, you subscribe and you pay into it, and then after that you receive an annuity, money working for you. But as the members of the group died, then their shares would devolve into other participants, so the value of each annuity would increase. And on the death of the last member, the scheme is wound up. And this became a huge corrupt thing, because people would
gives you a strong incentive to kill the other team.
Right, they were gaming the system. So it became increasingly common for people to buy tontine shares for young children, especially girls at the age of around the age of 5, since girls lived longer than boys, and by which age they were at less risk of dying of infant mortality. So, yeah, as a result, they were eventually abandoned, and by the mid-1850s, they've been replaced by other investment vehicles like penny policies. But it was a big scandal.
Do you feel that was a shift for the better from the tontine to
the
modern
penny policy?
To the modern, well, just the modern stock exchange?
Yes.
Maybe we'll end on that positive note. Ladies and gentlemen, Beth Jansen, ladies and gentlemen.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Margot Williamson. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Kate Bars is our coordinating producer, and our podcast intern is Quentin Bradshaw. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, it really helps us out if you leave a rating or positive review on iTunes. Thanks. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.